he bellows. Someone gives me a gas mask and a white lace hat. Gershwin's funny face is booming from the big KLH speakers. At midnight, everyone congregates in the living room to see what's next. They nosedive into a hogpile of writhing flesh, screaming, "I love you!" A mangy collection of electrified, reeling, bug-eyed loons filled with holy smoke. The house has blasted off. Steve Brooks looking like Martha Washington in a surgeon's drawstring pants with one rain boot and one after-ski boot. In love with cute Mary Kennedy. Jimmy Clifford's got his hand down Monica Mueller's pants. There's a guy unconscious on the pool table. At 5 in the morning, we dress up like old ladies and go to Perkins Pancake House for breakfast, hollow-eyed and covered in kisses. January, 1971. I heard the voice of Mrs. Loving Foss over my homeroom intercom say that I have been nominated to be a snow days candidate. What a hoot. Oh no, now it's really happened. I have been elected snow days king. My mop top got crowned on stage in the gym. Huge roar of laughter, disbelief, and applause from the student body. Flash bulbs go off. Flash, flash, flash. Much cheering from the heads, who have one of their own elected as the wintertime equivalent of homecoming king, traditionally given to the captain of the wrestling team. A purple velvet and faux ermine cape is put over my tattered Salvation Army shoulders. The queen, a very pretty straight girl I've never noticed before, and I march through the noisy throng, she holding a large bouquet of roses. It was fun, actually, but weird. My parents flipped out, having assumed I was an outcast from society. My cousin Cynthia said, "No, everyone loves Duncan." There was a photo of me in the high school paper looking appropriately wasted in art class, next to the two runners-up, a couple of burly jocks who looked like they could eat me for breakfast and still be hungry. Headline said, "Congratulations to our 1971 Snow Days King, Duncan Hanna." What a goof. The times, they are a-changin'. Things are heating up with Rachel, the raven-haired temptress from theater class. I sneak cigs with her under the stage. She tells me about an erotic dream she had with me. "When either of us get blue, we should comfort each other, don't you think?" she said in the foyer one day, looking very alive with lust. We made out at the cast party for Cincinnati World's Fair, and she wanted to find an empty bedroom, then and there. But like a fool, I told her to wait until the others went home. And the next thing I knew, she was gone. Seize the moment. She's got pale gray eyes like a Siamese cat, and hard, wide breasts, with permanently erect nipples. She came over after school one day, and we had scotch and sodas and grass, listening to a stack of rock records, and made out of my single bed, dry-humping like crazy. But she wouldn't go all the way out of deference to her boyfriend. Our time will come. We're like magnets drawn together. March 3rd, 1971. I'm staying at Kurtz this week. My parents are in Austria, and I'm not allowed to stay alone anymore after the New Year's Eve party debacle. Use chopsticks for Kurt's brown rice, onions, carrot, and mushroom diet. He wakes me up to give me a mug of honey and cinnamon and warm milk. He says, "Here, this'll help you sleep." Quit smoking butts. Don't brush my teeth. Read, draw, write, cut and paste, drive. Listen to Nico a lot. Meet Rachel for secret sexy rendezvous. I smell my fingers. She says, "You sure have a lot of energy. You're always right there." More concerts. Captain Beefheart, Rye Cooter, The Grease Band, Savoy Brown, The Faces, Ian and Sylvia, Miles Davis, Allen Ginsberg, Laura Nero, the Allman Brothers, the Stooges, Mata Hoople, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Jay Giles Band, Johnny Winter and John Mayall. Magazines say the 70s are going to be about nostalgia. There's still a war we're waging in Vietnam. I am not proud to be an American. I've been accepted to Bard College, Annandale on Hudson, so it's the East Coast for me next fall. I'll put myself in odd situations. I won't avoid challenges. I will uncover my true grit. I'll exhaust my resources and keep pushing through. I will embrace imperfection, something I find myself thinking about a lot. Fantasies about who I am and what I want may not be true. What is innately me will come naturally. I've been reading D.H. Lawrence lately. Saw Women in Love for the second time. I like the end where Alan Bates is living in a small stone cottage by a river with his blonde lover, catching fish for their supper. Aspirational. An Evening with Allen Ginsberg. Driving down Highway 12 on my way to the Guthrie Theater, I have a premonition that something big is going to happen tonight. Allen Ginsberg himself, Kerouac's best friend, an international ambassador for the Beat Generation, which is currently meaning more to me than this bogus Aquarian age I find myself in. There he is, doing a sound check, dressed in faded blue slip-on boat shoes, new baggy Levi's, a blue work shirt, a cheap early flower power wide pink and marigold tie, and a red lumberjack jacket. A beatnik! I'm working the show, so I seat the people, the beret crowd, college kids, plus a lot of English teachers and poet types. I crouch near the foot of the stage below his podium. Ginsberg's playing his harmonium. It's wheezing away. He uses a different voice for each poem. Pushes his black framed glasses up his nose. Shakes his big yoga belly. Swings his curly black ringlets to the ceiling. His Blakeian songs, his CIA conspiracies, his ganja weed references. Then he recites the Whitman-esque Please Master, his childlike ode to homosexual love. He looks down at me and chants it into my wide eyes, like a hypnotist. It's all about teenage bellies and innocent man-boy love, softly spoken in his faint New Jersey accent. Please, Master, make me say, please, Master, fuck me now. And then it's over, and he's beaming at me. And I was quite turned on by his sweet brazenness. There is a silence, a tittering of applause, then resounding applause. Intermission. Some of the straights left. Part 2. More William Blake songs. Ginsberg is fantastic, mesmerizing. Then the show is over. I climb up on the octagonal stage where the great man is talking with radicals and poets and people who are going to modern schools in Switzerland. He looks up at me and puts his arm around my waist and says, "Hello, what's your name?" "Duncan." "I saw you in the shadows and thought you were too good to be true." He's hustled away by some serious people, leaving me grinning at the fairy tale aspect of the magical night. Kurt, my closest beatnik buddy, and I go backstage, and I tell him about Alan's attentions. Kurt says, "He's trying to pick you up." Then we run into Alan, who's trying to escape from his fans. He asks us how to get to the green room. "Come on, we'll show you." And he follows us up a gray stairwell, carrying a worn leather attaché case full of poems. He says, "What are you two guys up to, anyhow?" "We're just a couple of high school kids," I say. "How do you know where the green room is?" "'Cause we work here," I say, looking back at him on the stairs. He's staring at me in an intense way and says, "You're too beautiful. You know that? I suppose everyone tells you that." I smile and shake my head no. "Really? You're too beautiful." "You're the beautiful one," I say and poke him in the stomach. In the green room, he asks if I want to go to a party. "I don't think I can," I said, it being a school night and all. "Well, come if you can," he says, sitting down into a full lotus position, about to give a press conference. Kurt and I adjourn into a corner by the vending machines. "Kurt, what do I do now?" I'm in his love spell. He is the king of the beats, and I am his designated crush. I watch his press conference in rapture. I was meant to give a bunch of guys a ride home, but I couldn't tear myself away from those beautiful vibes. He's telling a story about Bill Burroughs, now in England, who's making funny anti-marijuana advertisements. A mad scientist with a huge hypo injects pure cannabis into a buckled-down pregnant rat. The needle is so big that it pops the rat's stomach, blood everywhere. "See? That's what happens," Burroughs says in his expressionless voice. Alan is trying to drag himself away from the questioning people. He's still talking to someone as he pauses at a table and writes something down on an 8x5 index card. When he finally extricates himself, he comes over and puts his arm around me, gives me the card, says, "Here's where I'll be, then afterwards at the Gay Liberation Front, if you can make it." I say, "It sure was nice to see you." Alan says, "It was divine to see you, Duncan." Now we're at the exit. I give a little Hindu bow and say, "Goodbye." He bows double deep and says, "Shalom." That was it. I didn't go, even though I wanted to. I wanted more Alan, but not the kind that I was sure would be on offer. I could have told him about the animated short I was drawing based on Howl. I could have given him a copy of my newest comic, Lip Balm Comics. I could have asked him questions about Desolation Angels. But that's not what he would have been interested in. I recognized in his gaze the same look of infatuation that I too get when faced with someone whose beauty speaks to me in a personal way. As if you're witnessing some kind of miracle. Even tonight in the audience, I saw Lisa Friedman, who I've met once and fell instantly head over heels for. Too tongue-tied to even talk to her, dazzled by her looks. So I knew what Alan was feeling, although he was much more forward than me. I bet his seduction success rate is pretty high. I'm sure our paths will cross again. Angie, the virgin girlfriend, continued. She's pushing her body against me in a dark bathroom at a friend's house. We move to a bedroom, also dark. "Let's get naked," I whisper, unbuttoning her blouse. "Well, what if someone comes in and finds us flopping around like a couple of fishes?" "Then it will be funny," I reply. "Besides, we should be able to do anything together, and this stands between us. We could have done it all winter. If we do it, you won't feel so nervous about it anymore, and it'll be so much fun. We'll be like Indians." "Well, you'd have to stay with me all night. I couldn't go home alone. You'd have to be there." Her back is arched over my lap, pulling me so hard against her mouth that it clicks. She shudders as I stroke my fingers over her dark triangle. "No deflowering tonight." Back at the Guthrie for a Sunday night concert, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. Getting there early, I can hear them doing their sound check. Running down the back stairway, listening to the fantastic, majestic Emersonian organ. There he is in black, with his Prince Valiant haircut, with a colossal array of keyboards, piano, two organs, an electric harpsichord, a Moog a theremin. They're laughing, jamming, to an audience of one. Me. It's like being in a Baroque rock cathedral. What a rush. At the show, Keith plays pirate, sticks daggers in his organ. He's like a sexy Phantom of the Opera. When it was all over, I was leaving. Passed by the stage. Keith Emerson was alone, playing the piano. I said, "Good night." He looked up and said, "Yeah, man," and grinned. My dad says, generously, "Holly did everything by the book. Good grades, married a Harvard man, and all the rest. And you know, it's kind of boring. You, on the other hand, give me some vicarious excitement. I wanted you to be Ivy League and go to law school and become president of United Airlines. But you had these special talents that I don't understand. You shouldn't waste them. Either you're going to be a great success or a miserable failure." I read Jabberwocky by Lewis Carroll, inspiring nonsense prose. I was writing tons of stream of consciousness in the winter, squeezing my brain out like a sponge. Now I have Breathless to show for it, my self-published comic book, conceived with hashish, scrambled memories, and a rapidograph pen. I remember my adolescent boys' school friend, Henry C. His parents were rich, advertising. His glamorous mom had been on the cover of Life. Henry had braces. We were boxing partners, compulsory. He lived in a big house in Lake Minnetonka, and we used to swim there with his two younger sisters. We learned all the capitals of South America at the lunch table, cherry tomatoes. They were all Catholics. I often slept over on Saturday nights, huddled in sleeping bags in the basement, telling ghost stories. They'd leave me alone on Sunday morning when they went to Mass. I'd go through the junk drawers, watch their color TV, the first I'd seen, distorted dayglow. Play Henry's records, The Animals, The Love and Spoonful, Herman's Hermits, Beatles, Stones, Dylan. We played Spy. Henry was 008, and I was 006. Henry had watched his cousin make out on the couch and had checked for pubic hairs the following morning. Henry was brilliant, but a crybaby. He had freckles like alfalfa and a pudding bowl haircut. Wore glasses, was much smarter than me. I just got a letter from him from Montreal, where he now lives. He says, "People are androids, and he doesn't associate with androids." Henry and I had gone to Miss Mayhew's dancing school together. I wore Royal Lime cologne, danced a slow dance with prematurely busty Alice Kaplan to the box top's Neon Rainbow, and got a boner that I tried to hide from her. She was well aware of my condition and seemed to nestle right into it. Erotic bliss. There's a fancy party at the new Walker Art Center, which I've been hired to work at. Leo Kottke is the entertainment. After some gorgeous acoustic guitar instrumentals, he's blabbing to the guest about a diagram of a sperm cell he studied. Then says, "Excuse me, but I'm going to have to take a break for about half an hour to get something to eat, because if I don't, I'm going to be drunk for the rest of my life." The Minnetonka prom. All our girlfriends are graduating. Pre-prom party at my house. Cold duck, grass, wine, scotch, and Colt 45 malt liquor. We're listening to Reuben and the Jets to get in the mood. As for corsages, Tommy's got a lilac branch for Mary. I've got some wildflowers and a rubber band for Angie. Kramer's got a log for Lainey. We set off in my mom's station wagon. Lainey's already ripped her dress. Kramer's already stained his white tuxedo. He's puking out the back window as we're speeding down Highway 7 on our way to the country club. Then he's gone. Where'd he go? He's on the roof of the car. Tommy climbs out to get him. Lainey's crying because her boyfriend is crazy. So is she. Then she goes out the window to get him. All this at 50 miles per hour. They get him back in, but he's out again, this time dragging behind, ripping his knees out. I stop. We piss. Kramer casually says he's got suicidal thoughts. Finally, we get to the Lafayette Club and park. Kramer immediately disappears. Angie and I go into the lobby, trying to walk in a straight line. An official stops me. Okay, let's see your breath, he says. Huh? Let's see your breath. I've got peppermint certs in my mouth, so I blow at him. Okay, you better come in the office. The high school principal, Mr. Bromenschinkel, says, What have we got here? Drinking. What did you have? Looking him in the eye, I say, I had a beer about 2 hours ago. I feel fine. Well, the rules are blah, 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 says the principal. The police are called in. They call my father to pick me up. When he arrives, he greets me by saying, Hello, criminal. A very solemn ride home. We have to return the next day to pick up the car. All for a stupid prom that was supposed to be a goof in the first place. Brother. I break up with Angie. Big drama. Back at school after another wild weekend. Keg party with 100 crazies, busted by a helicopter. Pushing too hard. Feeling schizo. Snort some speed. Burn out my nose. My cock shrinks to the size of a peanut. Talk to my new pal Crosby about everything under the sun. About sex drives and nudism and Terrence Stamp and gold slipper suburbia and blackjack chewing gum and psychotic theater and Fleetwood Mac. My fantasies sometimes don't click with my true self, which causes opposition. But I'm about to leave to spend the summer with my sister in Naples. Her husband is in the Navy, stationed on the USS Cascade. Should be an eye-opener. Cat food. June 1971. Frankfurt, Germany. Got a layover. Staying in a brand-new germ-proof high-rise hotel. Outside, body odor and bratwurst. Sex supermarkets with brightly colored rubber ticklers in the window. Photo of a girl in bed with a pig. She's holding the pig's long, pencil-thin, pink thing. Germans! I spent the afternoon at the zoo, mostly at the baby chimp cage. So human. Fingers in their mouth like they're thinking, giving me that, why are you looking at me, look? There's a masturbating chimp, a street-fighting chimp. I buy some postcards of chimps, drink big glasses of beer, and eat a sausage sandwich. Naples. Italy is everything I ever thought about Italy, except magnified 100 times. Very like the Mastroianni-Loren movies I'd seen. Little change since World War II. My sister's elegant, marble-floored, high-ceiling apartment overlooks the Bay of Naples. 3 balconies. Rent is cheap, because the locals say it's haunted. It's not. The view is of the orange cubus roofs, palm trees, the blue Mediterranean. The top surface of Naples bristles with TV antennas. Tiny Fiats beep their shrill beeps. A lit-up gondola climbs Vesuvius in the distance. I love it. I feel exalted, elated, intoxicated. I am, in fact. Whiskey, wine, and beer are cheaper than Coca-Cola at the PX. Streets smell of French cigarettes. The men wear tight pants and open shirts and ogle my sister's bust and derriere. Fat old toothless mamas yell at kamikaze fiats. Lots of hand gestures. Stoplights don't mean anything. Honking is for honking's sake. Sandal children off to church. I bought 5 pairs of Continental-style shoes for $10 down at the market. A ragamuffin kid rattles clear plates to show how unbreakable they are. Roosters rush past on the cobblestones. I love the girls with their fleecy armpit hair. There are fish markets on the sidewalk full of huge sideswipe swordfish, dry and gray on the outside, flies buzzing around, and peachy pink and moist on the inside. Buckets of squid and octopus, a tripe stand, a medieval cart with an enormous hippopotamus head sticking up, for real. Whiskered nostrils, little gray ears. Stolen from the zoo? Sold to make soup? Surreal. The tobacco shops carry tobacco, salt, shoelaces, and auto parts. On New Year's Eve, at the stroke of midnight, Neapolitans throw their garbage out the window. There's a walk I often take from the top of the hill we live on down to the port. A long, narrow alley is populated by large rats. Large enough to challenge me, but it's cool, because I know the password. We have christened this Rat Alley. Past open doorways of afternoon dinners and siestas. Clotheslines hanging overhead with colored cotton garments. Past impromptu kickball games. At the bottom are beggar kids asking for chocolate or cigarettes. Their flies held together with safety pins. Old Neapolitans left over from the war, humpbacked, sucked out, pinch-cheeked, arms in slings, belt cinched tight, limping along cockeyed, cigarettes dangling from their drawn-in mouths. What we like to call gimpy. Then, too, there are the breezy tree-lined avenues, like Paris, with expansive outlooks of the city, vestiges of a once powerful city. The colors are the best thing of all. Sun-bleached Indian reds, old roses, mustards, terracottas, ivories, and chrome yellows, chipped and worn and scraped. We go to the NATO beach, where international babes are changing in the blinding sun. A trickle of soft black down, reaching from their belly buttons to their motts. We suck on rainbow popsicles called arcobaleno. Red is cherry, top. Yellow is lemon. Orange is orange, etc. Nothing better. Tan mothers with their crying naked infants. Someone's mom screaming, Babette! Babette! It sounds like a war hospital except for the whooshing of the ocean. The thick crust coal oven pizza is delicious. The lifeguard calls me Senor Haha. Locals call this the three swim beach. The sweaty swim and the drive out here. The swim you take when you're here. And the swim back in your car on the return. Summer of 71 reading list. The Hobbit, Tolkien. The Sun Also Rises, Hemingway. A Farewell to Arms, Hemingway. This Side of Paradise, Fitzgerald. The Great Gatsby, Fitzgerald. The Benson Murder Case, S.S. Van Dyne's Philo Vance Mysteries. The Gracie Allen Murder Case, S.S. Van Dyne. The Ginger Man, Don Levy. The Beastly Beatitudes of Balthazar B., Don Levy. Ada, Nabokov. The Narrative of Arthur Gordon Pym, Poe. Zelda, Milford. Bars is on the ship most of the time. It's just me and Holly. She's worried that I'm an alcoholic because I drink alone when there's no one to join me. We both smoke Winstons. Holly and Bars befriended a family called the Cristianos, headed by Salvatore, a taxi driver. He has twin pigtail daughters in the third grade, Nuncia and Rosaria. They look like little Italian mice and are total lunatics. They call me Tank or Ta. We go out at night for arcabalenos, hand in hand, not being able to talk. But they just laugh at me, because they pointed me out in an animal book, a skinny gorilla eating a banana. They find this hysterical. Nuncia says she and I are to be married. I say, si. She pulls at my long hair and says, bellissimo. She looks at a picture of an orangutan and says, mamma mia, what a brute. Rosaria has schemes, shakes her finger at me and says, attenzione, attenzione. I play T-Rex's woodland bop for them, and they dance around the living room, declaring it to be the best thing ever. They try on my hats and shriek with laughter. Nuncia is a natural actress, having studied old movie queens on TV, and repeats their body language as best she can. We dance, me on my knees, and I say, my love, you dance divinely. And she sighs, amore, and falls back over my arms in true 30s romance fashion. She sings sad love songs at the top of her lungs with open arms, real anguish. The huge extended Cristiano family sits around the dinner table at night, everyone screaming and laughing. Dinner is usually 8 to midnight. Mama says, long hair, you like Beatles. Si, mucho, I reply. I sit in the galleria, several stories tall, with a vaulted glass roof. An indoor-outdoor atmosphere. Gargoyles are perched up high. Shops line the courtyard, wings shoot off in all directions. Everyone gathers here. I sit at a cafe with a beer, happy to watch all the Europeans doing what they do, many doing what I do, watch, look, listen. A schoolboy in a blue uniform leans against a tobacco shop, playing with that wooden ball on a string that makes that infernal clacking noise. A female impersonator or sex change tries to pick me up. I keep saying, non capisto, non capisto, as I look up at his badly concealed beard. He went away angry, fake tits and all. I read the International Herald Tribune. June 26th, Naples. Return from Positano. Aquamarine beach with two beautiful bikinis next to me. Navy blue nipples fresh from the salty sea. Roman-nosed teenage girls with their arms linked through the crook of their mothers. They have to be in at 8 every night. They have nowhere to go, except if a fella's got a car. Then they park and steam up the Fiat windows. Virginity is well protected here. The mother and the whore bit. Highly sexed Catholic country. An Italian man always marries a girl 10 years his junior. Italy has the worst reputation in Europe. Naples has the worst reputation in Italy. Florence is the lady of Italy, Rome is the woman, and Naples is the idiot bastard daughter. July 4th. Jim Morrison just died in Paris of a heart attack. Only 27. I saw him twice at the Minneapolis Auditorium. The first time was fantastic. The Doors, transcendent. Took me to another world. The second time, Morrison was drunk, surly, bearded, bloated. A disappointment. Bar's Harvard roommate Mike shows up from teaching English in Japan. He's cool. He's riding his motorcycle across Europe. We bunk together. He says I smile in my sleep. We stay up late drinking liters of local wine and smoking some hash he got at a gas station in Morocco, watching Vesuvius steam, listening to Soft Machine, Third. Perfect. Mike and I walk up to a scrubby park with clay soil and cropped palms. We're sitting in the shade talking about the cherry bombs of our youth and two girls approach us. They want to take our picture because we look like the Rolling Stones. A crowd gathers to listen to this exchange. The more forward of the two girls is called Tina. She had a ratty shag, dirty feet, and a cold sore on her lip. On the plus side, she had a nice exposed stomach and round tits and a halter that looked fun. She said, "London is very beautiful, and so are you." Then she tugged on my hair to see if it was real. She takes off my new tortoiseshell sunglasses and says something about night, see? And druga. There are some guys standing around smiling, winking at me, giving me the thumbs up. I pass out cigarettes. One guy told Mike that she was propositioning me and that she'd already been tried and tested, wink, wink. She gave me her address, 23 Geronimo something, with some sort of rendezvous I didn't understand. Why does she have to be so grungy? I've got two female admirers, one the neighborhood slut, and the other is 9 years old. Led Zeppelin played in Milan last week and the building caved in. I smell garlic and olive oil. Bars is reading Archibald MacLeish aloud. I woke up with the sound of a dogfight in the courtyard below. I had a terrible pain in my chest. I get up and pad barefoot, flap, 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 across the cold marble floor, where I piss and drink some tap water. Went back to my Sunday morning bed and tried to get back to sleep. No dice. My left lung was popping, gurgling, sputtering, and bubbling. I vowed to never smoke again. I've been lucky so far. When I drew a breath, I got a sharp pain. Next day, I played tennis with Mike, and I hurt like hell. I'm in bad shape. Holly says we come from a long line of rheumatoid arthritis and muscular dystrophy. I breathed shallowly as I contemplated my early demise. TB? Cancer? My poor, seedy lung. I was meant to go to Capri today with Mike, mountain climbing and cafe drinking. Instead, I was put on a Navy launch, which brought me out to the USS Cascade. Bars was waiting on deck for me, looking embarrassed. He gave me a little wave and hustled me to the sick bay, where a doctor x-rayed me and tapped on my chest. Doctor was stumped. No spots detected. Pleurisy, maybe? He gave me pain pills and sent me back to my worried sister. Somebody asked JFK how he got to be a war hero. He answered, "They sank my boat." July 26, 1971. My chaste summer continues. I fall back on memories. Girls I've known and girls I wish I'd known. I think back to a day after school in suburbia. The jeweler's daughter letting her expensive sheepskin coat slide to the kitchen floor, landing with a thunk in a fiction of seduction she picked up in the movies. Kissed her pasty lips. Unzipped her pink turtleneck. She led me to her little girl slash slut bedroom, her words, with the single bed and the white wicker furniture, where she wrapped her flexible and elongated limbs around me as I buried myself in her nonfiction cunt. So I devote my time to watercolors and reading. I go outside to prowl the neighborhood. Two luscious girls approaching, swinging their butts. And one alerts the other to my approach. We're getting nearer. What do? Ask them to show me around or something? Submit to their open Italian stares? Now we are next to each other, and this dazzling creature, unexpectedly, breaks into a full-faced, lascivious smile that reduces me to a blithering idiot. That was it. That was my 22nd intense romance, struck by Cupid's arrow. And now it's over. I limp into Piazza del Maggiore and plop into a chair. Order a Pernod, wipe the sweat from my brow. Why am I so devastated by beauty and desire? The despair of desire. Sigh. August 1st, 1971. Only 2 weeks left of my Italian summer. I've gained 14 pounds. I weigh 129. Big fat Naples hit me to my Midwestern American soul. The rotten bay smell, the high-rise hairdos, the young magazine vendors, the cappuccinos, the marble statues, the mad beggars, the ratty palm trees. The squares are like stage sets. Families fanning themselves in their plaster sitting rooms, lit by the blue glow of their televisions. The parking lot attendant looks up from his comic book and says, "Hey, English, you want to buy a watch? I can get you anything." "I don't want anything. I'm content with what I've got, thanks." And wave. The sound of Ringo Starr's "It Don't Come Easy" wafts from the cafe jukebox. Squealing tires. The Commodore of the Sixth Fleet lent my brother-in-law's private launch. We were joined by a couple of bearded sailors and two English girls from Brighton they'd met at the USO. I couldn't help but notice that one of the lovelies' pubic hair was bursting from the side of her paisley bikini bottoms. We had a picnic of fried chicken, potato chips, and beer. Lots of beer. Because of the intense heat, you see. The girls were on the foredeck, while we men ogled and my sister scowled. We anchored in a private cove off Capri, very reminiscent of Skull Island and Peter Pan. I couldn't believe how perfect this location was. I dove in and swam to some carved sandstone steps on the cliffside and scuttled to the top. Took in the blazing blues of the Mediterranean. Climbed down and put mask and flippers back on. Moseyed about in the clear aquamarine water with little fish. Followed them into a tunnel, leading to a round grotto with a small sand beach at the end. Illuminated by the outside sunlight refracted through the water, creating an otherworldly glow. I fantasized about coming to the rescue of pouty-lipped Haley Mills, a lock of her golden hair falling over one eye. I stayed in my private cave in a state of excitation. When I swam out at last, the sun had begun to drop from the sky, leaving orange streaks. Naples was a washed-out pastel on the horizon. I read Candide in one sitting. I enjoyed the adventure very much. The implied raciness leaves much to the imagination. How does one treat sex? Each in his own way, I suppose. Is the sun and the moon in a celestial master plan? With honor? With lewdness? With grubby-fingered junior high delight? With wide-eyed never-get-used-to-it wonder? Then I moved on to Nabokov's Ada, which I loved. I remember staying at the Montreux Palace with my parents in the spring of 1967. It was foggy and quiet. Off-season. There was an older man in the enormous formal breakfast room every morning reading the paper by himself. Was it Nabokov? That's where he lived. I'd like to think it was. That trip I was recovering from a broken leg, ski accident at Vail, and walked with a cane. I wore a brown beret. I was in love with Europe and Jane Fonda and had recently discovered masturbation, of which I had become a great devotee. I remember swimming in the pool alone, gusts of mist wafting over the chlorinated water, very moody indeed. I remember thinking that I would never forget this, and I never did. Bought an excellent LP on pink vinyl called Never Neverland by the Pink Fairies. Their drummer is called Twink. Great anthem called Do It. Not only are they telling us to do it, they are doing it. Don't think about it, slash. All you gotta do is do it. Don't talk about it, slash. All you do is do it. Great riff, great message, Some old pope's blood is kept in a phial and is supposed to boil 3 times a year. And if it doesn't, the superstitious Neapolitans get uptight. Businesses fail. Candle makers don't have the heart to work with tallow anymore, etc. So the new conqueror goes to the local priest and says, "You better make that blood boil, man." So the priest makes the blood boil, and the people say, "Ah, good! The blood boiled!" And they go back to their jobs. Bye-bye, Naples. 3 days in Rome with Holly, still hot as hell. We sit around various sidewalk cafes drinking cappuccinos. Freddo e caldo. Pernod. Anisette. Chartreuse. Guinness Stout. Dark German ales, etc. Rome is noisy. Rome is chic. Rome is where Leda and her relationship with a swan is captured in oil and marble, over and over. I read into a naughty Pauline Bonaparte, reclining on an Egyptian couch in a lovely villa. At night they turn out the lights and view her cold marble sheen by candlelight. When asked how she could have posed for the scandalous statue in the nude, Pauline replied, "Oh, the studio was heated. I was here in 1963, reading The Agony and the Ecstasy, madly excited by the Colosseum, where I found a bone. I was convinced it belonged to a gladiator and wanted to bring it home, but my mother wouldn't let me." August 14th. Back at the Steigenberger Hotel in Frankfurt. Continental breakfast next to airline executives. Marmalade and the Green murder case. Returned to Minneapolis just in time to see The Who playing Tommy at the 1,200-seat Guthrie. Searchlights roaming over the audience. Townsend banging his cherry red Gibson over his knee. He does a little two-step, then charges his high-watt amps like an enraged animal. Moon doing an antic pantomime. Daltrey center stage, bathed in a silvery halo, singing his "See me, feel me, touch me, heal me," as Pete rips it up from the wings. They debuted songs from Who's Next. Fantastic. Moonlight, 10 p.m. Skinny dipping at Cedar Lake, which supposedly has a sea monster in it. Lainey, Angie, and I silently glide in the cold, inky water. Pools of love and seaweed. Beautiful, naked teenage nymph euphoria. Dripping sirens emerge from ankle-deep shallows against shadowy shoreline. Timeless. 2 a.m. A trio of freaks, two boys and a girl, drove up in a Valiant and tapped at my bedroom screen, wanting to say hello to me after my return from Italy. I slipped out and talked to them in the backyard. Mom magically appeared in her nightgown, shooed them away, and then let me have it. I have never been so disappointed in anyone in my entire life. What a stoop! I told her she was crazy and petty. I don't even want to know what you were doing out there. I had an unnatural act with a dog, I say, pissed off. No, and I don't care if you do, or with boys. In fact, I don't care how much you get. Just make sure she's on the pill, and don't get syphilis. Speaking of which, Angie's virginity has finally been breached. She's got an apartment on Chicago Avenue with a couple of other hippie girls. A nice room. Bed level with the window. Moonlight streaming in. She's nervous and passive, but she is nude. That's a good start. I realize I have to take charge. I put two pillows under her. I put her small fingers on my smooth cock. Her legs go back. I work around the ground gained. A little bit of rhythm. She's back. I'm forward. And by accident, we hit it just right. And with an intake of breath and a gasp, the taut membrane snaps aside and takes me in. She fades away just like a heroine in a Victorian novel, eyes closed. I marvel at her pretty face, colored with passion. Ardent tongues and biscuit odors. She kneaded me and rocked me ever so subtly, and then swooned off. Ecstasy. We slept encased in one another. In the morning, soft light, haystack breath, gypsy hair, rumpled sheets. Angie whispers, "Do you want to make love?" Once the genie is out of the bottle. I had to go to court for a speeding charge, and my dad had the judge changed to a family friend. Dad asked me to cut my hair for the occasion. I said I couldn't. "Why?" he asked. "I can't put it into words. You just have to be 19 to understand." Something to do with outrage and cool. The judge had the charges dropped, told me to keep my nose clean, as I was on probation now. Whew. Honey called me from Dixie this morning, saying, "I'm ready to be your girl forever." Her baby is due in January. I tell her words she doesn't want to hear, that I can't. I'm still a child myself. Must go to college. Must travel the globe and meet everyone in the world. "But can't you do that with me next to you?" she pleads. Poor honey. All this misplaced love. She never had a chance. 3 weeks home from Naples. Did I dream it? Bard. Freshman year, 1971. I'm rooming with a curly-haired kid from Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey, Lloyd Bosca, in a modern white cinder block co-ed dorm called Tewksbury. Resembles a Holiday Inn. This must be the male ponytail capital of the world. The fashion is work shirts, blue jeans, and sneakers. Same for girls except for the addition of nipple-showing t-shirts and Art Deco dresses. Women's lib is in full force. There isn't a brassiere in sight. 700 students total. The East Coast kids can't believe I came all the way from Minnesota. "What's out there, anyhow?" they ask. The hallways smell of dope. A guy that looks like Charlie Manson, actually named Charlie, says, "Well, you can major in sex, or drugs, or religion, etc." Bard's sister schools are Goddard, where the drugs come from, Hampshire, Bennington, Antioch. Expensive, radicalized colleges for creative types. Lloyd is a bit of a character. Loves Pinocchio and his bad friend, Lampwick. He's got a Volkswagen Beetle, so we drive down to the city to see Dan Hicks and his hot licks at the Café Agogo. Laconic Dan says, "We're going to do a series of tunes, know what I mean?" Sid Page on violin during I Scare Myself was sublime. I'm reading Lolita. Such writing. Such feeling. Memoirs of a Beatnik by Diane de Prima. The Tin Drum by Gunter Grass. The Painted Bird by Jerzy Kosinski. Bard Girls. Number 1. Quiet, sad, dark-haired girl on a stair landing has on a skin-tight white t-shirt, molding her perfectly shaped tits, complete with very visible ebony nipples. Eyes front! She has a German shepherd, and someone told me they saw her in the woods giving her dog a hand job. Number 2. Jean Hammond from Boston, in her Oxford cloth shirt and pale blue sweater, horn-rimmed glasses and barrette. Very pretty. She's in my art and aesthetics class. We walk into the woods and linger under a hoary stone bridge. She knocks on my door at night to share a bedtime joint with me in her nightgown and bathrobe. She says, "I don't have a heart for anyone. I act silly instead. I should just kiss her and let nature take its course." She said, "You must have really nice parents. because I never met anyone like you before. You're so free. Most of the kids here have divorced parents. They've seen shrinks. They have antidepressants. Number 3. Suzanne from Widmere, Long Island, on a diet of Fresca, lipstick, and Cools. She bends over, and I see her pale, pink, untouched nipples, another virgin. She lost relatives in the Holocaust. She loves the kinks. On the KLH, white light, white heat, Velvet Underground. Desert Shore, Nico. Rough and Ready, Jeff Beck Group. Rory Gallagher. Looking On, The Move. Electric Warrior, T-Rex. Letter from best Minneapolis pal Kurt says he got drunk with Angie and they had sex because they missed me. Then he described it in detail, in faux Kerouacian prose, like I'd enjoy that? True, I am far away. What's she supposed to do, wait for me? I'm jealous just the same and feel left out. Possessive me, double standard me. But it's autumn, and the leaves are exploding with New England color. I walk to the waterfalls wrapped in my fantasy world. I always go to my classes. I only have 5 or 6 a week. I try to outwit my teachers. My next-door neighbor, John Browner, comes in my room and says, "Hey, Shakespeare, what do you say we go down the road?" No money. Plus, I gotta study my anthropology. "I'm treating," he says, and we're off. 8 beers later, and he's singing his pornographic version of The 12 Days of Christmas for the 3rd time. My drawing teacher is at the next table trying to make a tough little chick. We stagger back to campus, stopping often to piss, crying for a joint to solidify our sloshy beer high. There's a sign in our hallway that says, "Whoever ate my guinea pig, thanks a lot, Paul." Someone has written underneath, "It was delicious." There's a sign on my door, 214, that says, "Sorry, no visitors. Duncan has contracted a rare ape-like disease, which is highly contagious." We check on my roommate, who's talking in his sleep. We go to John's room and smoke some weed and dissolve to the soft machine, Moon in June. Never tire of that song. November 10th. The sky has ribcage-shaped clouds. Read the picture of Dorian Gray. Gave me some good ideas. Also, The Song of Roland and Flowers of Evil. My drawing teacher, Jake Grossberg, is angry at me for handing in lazy homework. He says that I'm not expressing myself with art. I'm expressing myself with drugs and sex. He says to break through. Attempt what you cannot do. Push! You're better than most superstar high school hotshot artists. Sometimes you're mind-blowing. But then you're masturbatory and hand in this San Francisco comic book bullshit. Break through it! He says I'm compulsive. Tells me to look up Egon Schiele. Jake doesn't like him, but knows I will. He's right. It blows my mind. I'm also in the throes of de Kooning worship. Lloyd and I got drunk and went to the Rainbow Room to hear Jerry Vale. Lloyd's twisted idea of surreal fun. Jerry had blue skin. Sang Norwegian Wood. Creepy. Captain Beefheart is more my speed. Back at Bard, the sky was so gray and foggy and misty that I realized I was alive. Walking down dirty black Annandale Road, breathing air, smelling the wet earth. Alive! I scream at the fir trees. Alive! I wonder at the world. I am here. Now! I'm alive! One of the living things. Pretty friend Suzanne got us tickets to the Kinks at Carnegie Hall. First dinner at the dark